Now this is my kind of party. Grab a friend, bring the guns. It's time for the Co-Opticast.
To another Co-Opticast. This is Co-Opticast episode number 46 for Sunday, July the 11th, 2010. I am Nick. I'm joined by Mike.
Hello.
How are you doing this evening, Mike?
I'm doing pretty good. I had a pretty busy weekend.
Yeah, me too. Being a homeowner again, I now have chores.
Oh.
So, but it was good. It's becoming mine again, which is nice. Nice to have my home. So
yeah, I don't know what that feels like.
But it's also good to play games. So what games have you been playing?
Well, I've been pretty busy with work, so I haven't had as much time to play as I would like, but I have played a lot of Crackdown 2. We managed to get our hands on several copies among the staff, and we played a lot of co-op. I'm sure everyone saw the review that we posted earlier in the week. And I'm kind of disappointed to read I went on like Metacritic and looked at a lot of the other reviews, and I think a lot of people miss the point about Crackdown.
I agree.
The point of Crackdown is that it's repetitive because it's fun to get friends together and do those things, regardless of whether the things themselves are particularly interesting. And the real point of that game is to level up your superpowers and cause mayhem. And when you have four players in the game and, if three people are driving around and you decide you want to be a jerk, so you ram into them and kick the vehicle they're all sharing off a bridge, that's fun. If someone is trying to climb up a building with you, but you get up to the top first and you UV shotgun them as they're ascending the top ledge and they fall to their death, that's fun. It's hilarious. And that's when the game's at its best. And, I guess I'm a little disappointed that the city is so similar, even with the changes. It's like, oh, I remember this area. Oh, there's still a hidden orb over here. Oh, well, the path to get up is slightly different.
Yeah.
The color palette isn't really as colorful as the first one. I do agree that some of the charm might have been lost, but the fun is still there. Like, all of the fun is still there. The fact that, I can get the agency, the dune buggy thing almost right away and start jumping off ramps and shooting, the chain gun all over the place, or, finding new and interesting ways to climb up the agency tower. And, I'm sure you remember what we found in the smokestack on the side of it.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's fun. It's fun as hell. And people who are on the fence about it, if you like games that let you create your own fun, and you don't really need to be led around by a story or, anything like that, I would definitely play Crackdown 2 because it is, orb addiction is still there. A lot of the stuff they changed makes it more fun. Like, the rooftop races are a time trial rather than you having a time limit, driving is actually a worthwhile endeavor.
Especially when you run over the freaks.
Yeah, because I remember in the first game I would pretty much get everything to max level, and my driving would be like level 1 or 2.
Yeah.
Because it was just boring. And once your agility was sufficiently high enough, you move across the city faster than you possibly could in a car. So there was no point. But, now with a lot of the vehicles having weapons and the battle buses and things like that, it's really fun.
One thing that gets me is, a lot of people are like, well, it's not that different. It should have been an expansion pack. It's like, have you seen what passes for an expansion pack nowadays?
Yeah.
Like, people are paying $15 for 3 maps in Call of Duty. There's a lot more content than something that's in, a 3-map pack or something like that. And we haven't even touched that they added a whole Versus portion to Crackdown 2 as well.
Yeah, and they did announce that one of the DLCs is going to be similar to the Keys of the City, which basically means we're going to have endless fun, because I remember, the original Keys to the City causing, massive explosions wherever and whenever we wanted to was fantastic.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree, though. I think the reviews were kind of... I don't know what they were expecting, why they expected the game to be that drastically different than the first.
I mean, it's a... The first game, we love it, but I understand completely that it was kind of a mediocre game and it became a cult classic. It's not...
Yeah.
Like, the game, you know... The fact that you could make your own fun in it is what saved the original from, you know, not being anything but a vehicle for getting the Halo 3 beta.
Yeah.
And, you know, especially with the compressed timeline that the developers had to put this one out, which we'll discuss later, you know, I'm surprised that people are complaining that this one is also fun, but apparently people need every game to be a work of art so they can throw it at Roger Ebert and say, look, you should play this. Anyway, in addition to Crackdown 2, I've been playing Persona 3 Portable. Persona 3 is pretty much my favorite RPG of, like, the past 10 years or so. So the fact that I can now play it on my PSP is amazing, and they made a lot of changes to make it more portable-friendly, and it's still as fun and addictive as ever. And, you know, it's like 80 hours long, so it's not like... It's not
almost
like,
as long as it takes to download, right?
Oh, jeez.
Jim said something that you were having some issues. I tried downloading a game the other day. It was 750 meg. It took 3 hours to download.
Persona 3 Portable is like 1.1 gigs, right? Uh-huh. And they put it up, PSN refreshed at 8 p.m., and I started downloading it right then. And my download didn't finish until, about 12:30, right? And in the meantime, on my PC, on my Mac, I've been downloading, you know, some stuff off of iTunes, including some videos that were like a gig plus, and I was pulling each of those down in 20 minutes. So it's not like my connection sucks or something. It's
Well, I downloaded. It was a Friday at lunchtime at work. I mean, you know, I basically work for an ISP. We peer with 6 different internet providers.
Yeah.
So we have an enormous amount of bandwidth, and it took that long to download. I was like, oh, I'll download this, you know, right before lunch, and I can play a little bit and stuff. I figured it would take, you know, 20 minutes, 25 minutes.
I just hope that those PSN Plus subscriptions go towards a better bandwidth allocation, because it's really, like, Xbox Live can be slow at times, but most of the time it's a lot faster than PSN.
Yeah.
And, so that pissed me off. But Persona 3 is, like, I will recommend it to anybody who even thinks they have a passing interest in RPGs, because it is really, it's very different. Like, you hear a lot of things about it, and you might be like, well, that sounds strange and weird, and I'm uncomfortable with this. Because it's a JRPG and a high school dating simulation mashed with Pokemon.
I might have to check it out if it ever goes on sale or something on PSN.
Well, you know, next time you're over, I can lend you a PS2 copy.
There we go.
Because I own the PS2 version and the PS2 version with the expansion pack. So I'm not without copies of this game. And, you know, once again, we'll talk about this later, but since it's now 10 years old, I've been playing through Diablo 2 again with a friend.
Nice.
And, I tend to always play the Sorceress, but I always play, like, Frost Sorceresses. I just really like, you know, Frozen Orb and you know, Blizzard and things like that. But I'm taking full advantage of the fact that you can respec a character now.
Mm-hmm.
And I basically have, like, early level, like, lightning spells, and then I put the rest in warmth, so I have, like, a ridiculous amount of mana regeneration, but I don't do much damage, but I can also, like, machine gun my spells.
Interesting.
And when I'm level 20 or so, I'm gonna, you know, pop my respec and actually spec the character out properly. But that game, I really want Diablo 3, because Diablo 2 has so stood the test of time.
Yeah.
You know, it's still just as fun as it was. It's definitely shown its age, you know. Things like you know, Titan Quest and Torchlight have definitely, you know, moved the bar in terms of feature set in those types of games. But man, there's just something about Diablo.
Yeah, I agree. It's, Yeah, hopefully we only have like another year and a half here for it to wait. You know, we're finally getting StarCraft 2 here in, what, two weeks?
I'd be willing to bet that someone takes the mod tools for StarCraft 2 and makes Diablo.
Could be.
God, guys, oh, I just can't wait for Diablo. Let's just make it.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. But Diablo 2 is still great, and co-op is fun as hell. I just wish there was a better way to trade.
Yeah. Okay, well, let's see. Moving on, I, like you, I played Crackdown 2 a whole bunch. I wanted to beat it for the review, but the last mission is ridiculously hard by yourself, and so I've been waiting to get a co-op partner to finish that. So that's where I am in that. I picked up Afterburner Climax on the PSN or the Xbox Live sale because it was $5.
Mm-hmm.
I like the Sega arcade games like Outrun, and Afterburner Climax is just like that, but it's the aerial combat version of that. So, yeah. Been enjoying that, and then I traded in all of my old PSP stuff, like UMD movies, all of the old PSP games, my PSP 2000. A couple old Wii games and a bunch of stuff, and I picked up a PSP Go, and
it feels, I got that. It feels good, doesn't it? I've always been like, screw the haters on that. I really like that version of the PSP a lot more than the candy bar.
I do. I like it because I like getting rid of the clutter. That's definitely nice. The form factor, it's a little crampy for me. But I do like the analog on it a lot better. The screen seems a little bit better, too. The 2000 screen was never the best. I know they improved it with the 3000.
Yeah, the screen on the Go is a lot more... I find it's a lot more vibrant, and because it's like a quarter inch smaller or whatever, it's a little sharper.
Yeah. So that came... I picked it up, and that came with three games. It came with SOCOM, Little Big Planet, and Ratchet and Clank, I think.
Yeah.
I've only played SOCOM a bit, which is pretty fun. They definitely, they made it work pretty well for the PSP. You can do analog aiming, but they also have kind of like snap to aiming as well, which gives a little more arcade feel, but it's still,
yeah,
you know, it's got really good production values for a handheld game. You know, there's full voice acting and stuff like that, so. And then the game I was downloading on Friday that took 3 hours was the Castlevania Dracula X Chronicles. Which I guess is a 3D version of two of the Castlevania games.
Rondo of Blood.
Yeah.
Well, it's Rondo of Blood, and you can unlock Symphony of the Night in it, and you can play it. Like, you can play the original version or a 3D version of Rondo of Blood. There's Symphony of the Night, and I think there might be one other game hidden in there. But
so that was only, there was only $10.
Yeah.
So... I was we reported on the upcoming Harmony of Despair, whatever
it's
called.
You mean Castlevania HD?
Yeah. That's coming out. So I was like, ooh, yeah, you know, I could use a game to kind of get in the mood for that, so I'd check that out. And it's pretty good so far.
It's hard to go back to that. I personally find it hard to go back to the classic Castlevania style, though.
Mm-hmm.
You play as, Richter in that one?
Yeah.
But, you know, a couple levels in, you can unlock Maria, who plays a lot more like a modern Castlevania character. You know, she can barely take any damage, but, you know, she has, like, the double jump and the dash and things like that.
Yeah.
I found her abilities made that game a lot more fun.
Yeah.
But Rondo of Blood was always kind of like a holy grail for importers, because there was a PC Engine version that never got translated, and we got... Like, there was a Super Nintendo port, which was, like, not the same game, but kind of. And I think there was a Genesis version as well. But the PC Engine was, like, the super version of that game. And it didn't come until we got Dracula X Chronicles, which devalued everyone's import, since everyone could, you know, buy it for $20 or whatever it came out as. But it's quality. Yeah.
So yeah, so that's what I've been playing, but we can move on to the co-op news now, and kind of transitioning right into that, we were just talking about the Castlevania game coming out, but there's a whole slew of co-op
Death
games.
Spank.
Yeah, yeah. Specifically on Xbox Live Arcade, the entire Summer of Arcade, with the exception, I think, of Limbo, has co-op. So it's like the next like 5 weeks of Xbox Live Arcade releases. You got Monday Night Combat, Castlevania, Lara Croft, which we previewed a few weeks back, Deathspank, which you just mentioned, and then what was just released, which I guess technically isn't part of the Summer of Arcade, but is Blacklight Tango Down, which has, I think there's 4 co-op missions on that. And I was checking that out, and the production values on that for a $15 like title, really, really high.
It's all the money Ignition made off of Deadly Premonition.
It could be. yeah, it's a, you know, it's Unreal Engine 3 powered, so it looks really good.
Yeah.
And there's lots of customization stuff. I didn't get to play too much of the co-op stuff. What's nice about the demo, though, is I wish more games did this. It's one of those time-limited demos. You can play full multiplayer online. You just have an hour with it.
That's really nice.
So you can check out the co-op and all that kind of stuff. So that was pretty good.
I wish more games did that.
I like that.
It's like the Crackdown 2 demo was really good. It's like you had a half hour, but you could roam across pretty much almost the entire city, right?
Or what? I think so. I think they limited you a little bit. There might be one or two islands that were closed off, but...
But still, it was, you know, a good deal of the game that you could roam around and see what it was all about.
Yeah, actually, that reminds me. So one of the things I've been doing is messing around with XNA, doing some programming with a buddy of mine. We're working on something, and we were doing some research, and I don't know if people know, but all the Xbox Live indie games are the same way. You have access to the full game, but it's just a time limit. I think it's, depending on the game, it's like 15 or 30 minutes. You know, most of the games are quick enough that 15 minutes is a pretty accurate representation. So.
Oh, yeah, and speaking of Xbox Live indie games, if you have a sense of humor, you should check out Breath of Death 7. It's a pretty funny send-up of old-school, like, 8-bit RPGs.
Okay. Yeah, there's actually quite a few pretty decent games out there. We were... I know I kind of did a write-up of it on the site, but the game Murky Horizon, which is only $1, is a really awesome top-down shooter mixed with tower defense. In co-op, it's a lot of fun. We played a good 2 or 3 hours of it this weekend, a friend of mine and I... So definitely check that out if you're a fan of either of those genres. It does a great job. You know, not the best graphics or anything, but gameplay wise, it's just a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Let's move on and let's hit the Crackdown 2 section of this podcast. I know it feels like it's already been mostly devoted to it, but we had 2 interesting stories about Crackdown 2 kind of surface after release. One was about the crunch time development of the game. And the game itself, I guess, took about 1.5 years from start to finish to create. And the team said that basically the past 9 months has been solid crunch time development. So they knew right from the beginning that like they only had X amount of time. So they had to, you know, make do with that and decide what they wanted to do with the game and what not to. Which, you know, is why we get things like, yeah, it's the same city. It's just different geometry and, you know, a few things here and there. But another thing that kind of came up, we had posted a story a few months ago about a survival mode that was planned to be in Crackdown 2. And it was actually going to be like an 8-player survival mode, kind of like Horde and all those other ones we've seen. But we noticed when we were trying to review it that it was missing. And so we kind of got an official response that, you know, due to the time constraints, they had to kind of cut what they had. But it appears that there might be the survival mode as DLC. I can't remember what they called it. I should have had it up. But one of the DLCs that were unveiled via...
It's not Toy Box, it's the other one.
Yeah, Deluge. That was it. It was Deluge.
Deluge?
But, yeah. The Avatar... what are they called? Unlocks or Avatar... toys, whatever you want to call those things. They actually say if you kind of hover over the ones that are still locked, what they're from, and it was kind of leaked in there, the names of the DLC. And then there was an official interview with an MTV multiplayer blog where they just kind of mentioned, yes, there's 2 official DLC packs coming, but they didn't give details of anything but the toy box, which is basically keys to the city,
That makes me so happy. I'm pretty sure in my mini review bit, I specifically asked for a Keys of the City mode, and my prayers were answered like the next day.
Yeah. So, you know, it's an example of a team making, you know, do with what they can. It's nice that they're kind of upfront about it and not really. I mean, they're kind of making excuses, but they're just kind of also laying it out there that, like, you know, this is what we had, this is what we did, and why we did it.
And it's still fun as hell, so, like I said before, screw the haters.
Yeah, I mean, it was kind of nice. They basically said, we wanted to focus on the four-player co-op, so that was what they designed everything in mind. So, you play that game with a bunch of other people, you're going to have a lot of fun.
Yeah.
So.
Guaranteed.
So, moving on, you kind of hinted at this earlier, StarCraft II, how powerful its editor is, but somebody actually remade the original Metal Slug's first act in the StarCraft II map editor, which is, it's crazy, but the quote-unquote map editor is like a full scripting language and everything else, I guess.
Well, you could do that in the Warcraft III editor. I actually have a friend who made a pseudo turn-based JRPG with the Warcraft III engine.
Huh.
So this is a big extension on the capabilities of that.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, it looks like it's going to be really powerful. They have already talked up that, you know, any kind of game type is going to be possible. And then the big thing will be there's going to be some kind of marketplace involved here where people can put their stuff up. And it'll be accessible, you know, right in-game. Whether you have to actually tell them your real name when you do that, I don't know. We won't even go there. We're not going to touch the real ID thing.
Yeah, well, it's
that was
kind
that
of
was
a
over before point. Over before it started, right?
Yeah.
So, finally, that's coming out the 27th of this month. So I know entire country's going to be happy about that, or maybe not. I'll be curious to see how South Korea.
They already put it on their airplanes, dude.
Yeah, I guess. But what if it's not everything they hoped it would be?
It's more StarCraft.
Yeah.
You played the beta, right?
Yeah. I guess so. It's not any different. It really isn't.
I mean, it is, but it isn't.
It's just like Crackdown 2, right?
Yeah.
It's StarCraft 2 with a nice, you know, new coat of paint and some different things tweaked here and there. Anyway, let's move on. Something coming out this week on Xbox Live is a new arcade browser called Destination Arcade. Looks pretty interesting, I guess, now that, you know, the Xbox has been out 4 years, right? Are we going on 4 or 5?
It's just about 5. It came out in, what, October of 2005, right?
Yeah. So we're going on 5 years for the Xbox. There's a lot of arcade games. I think they said it's up to almost 600 in the catalog. So they needed a better way to browse and find games. Because, believe it or not, you know, there are people that are just buying an Xbox for the first time, and, you know, they go on there, and it's a little daunting trying to find some of that older content. So according to this Destination Arcade, it'll do things like recommendations based on other ones you've purchased, and the rating system's going to kind of weigh in.
I just want it to be a little easier to get into games that I have downloaded. Because, you know, you have the game in your disk drive, and it'll, you know, you go to your My Xbox section, it'll have a big pretty icon that says play this game.
Yeah.
And then you have to tab over 2 or 3 times to get to your Xbox Live stuff. And then it displays it in either the order it was downloaded or the order you last played it.
Yeah.
So if you've got like 100 old games on there, it might be kind of weird to find stuff.
Do you have that problem where when you go to that page, it takes a good, sometimes like 10, 15 seconds to load up?
No.
My page where, you know, you can choose like your arcade games or your install games or indie games or whatever, sometimes the first time I go to that page, it's a good like 15 seconds before I can click a menu item.
That's weird, but I generally delete stuff off of my list if I haven't played it in a while.
Yeah.
So if you've got a bunch of your old games up there, it might just be.
Yeah, it could be that. Let's move on and let's talk about, speaking of content, Marvel Ultimate Alliance 2. The DLC is back. Yay! Okay, not really.
Hooray, hooray. Maybe it has the fun.
So that DLC kind of mysteriously disappeared earlier this year. There's speculation of what happened, licensing issues, this and that. Now it's mysteriously back. There's a big press release and everything, but no explanation of why or whatever. But they did say you have until the end of the year to get it. So if you want it, you only have until December 31st to purchase it. It's like $10 for a pack with all the characters except Juggernaut, who's separate for $2 or something like that.
Because he's so big.
Yeah. moving on. Fable 3. There's some lofty sales expectations for the game, which is coming to both Xbox and PC at the same time this fall. I believe it's 5 million copies they hope to sell, which is quite a large number considering Fable 2 sold around 3.5 million. That was just on the 360. So,
yeah.
But we did find out that shortly after release, the game's going to go episodic, just like Fable 2 did quite a while after its own release. So you'll get to play the first part of the game for free again as like the quote-unquote demo. And then you'll get to a certain part and it'll be like, you know, do you want to play the next episode? And you insert your hundreds of quarters or whatever it ends up being, and you keep playing. Yep. So I guess apparently that the episodic version did quite well. And
I just double checked, and I guess Fable 2 hit 3.65 million sold.
Yeah.
So I don't think five is really that. I think they could probably hit 4 at least.
Well, yeah. I mean, they have the bigger install base now. Like I said, if you lump the PC version in with it, you got a pretty big target market.
I mean, come on, it'll probably have two million pirated copies alone. They'll just count that towards sales.
Yeah. Oh, that'll be the day.
We only sold 500,000 copies, but 4 million people played our game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We'll see. I don't know. I'm staying away from the hype on that one. I want to, you know, I got really hyped up for Fable 2. I liked the game, but we all know how the co-op was. They say that they're going to fix the co-op in this one. You know, they admitted it was quote unquote rubbish in Fable 2. But I'm just, we'll see.
Fable 3, they're pulling the wool over our eyes, and when we buy it, it's going to be Milo. You have your kids in Fable, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, Fable 3, you'll go and you'll do your quests and you'll find a lovely wife who will laugh at your fart jokes, and you'll have a kid, and then all of a sudden the game becomes Milo.
Well, they have said that the game is going to support Kinect, but they have not said how.
And they've also said that the Milo project is not dead.
Yeah.
There
was that whole fiasco where, Left Coast didn't know what Right Coast was doing, basically.
Yeah.
And so we'll see. Well, so what was it originally? It's like, oh yeah, Milo became the Kinectimals thing. And then they're like, no, it didn't. There's no Milo technology in Kinectimals. And then it's like, well, Milo is not supposed to be a real product. And like, well,
Milo is not Skittles, damn it.
Yeah. Oh, Skittles.
Milo, you want to come play with Skittles? Okay.
Okay, that was. We're sorry about that.
Okay, yeah. Come here, Skittles.
So let's talk about something manly. Let's talk about barbarians and wizards and skeletons and necromancers and Diablo 2.
Yeah, Diablo 2 is awesome.
Play it. 10 years old. when the game came out, I was working at Electronics Boutique at the time. And that was a time when like PC games actually had wall space at Electronics Boutique. And I remember we got the shipment in of the special editions, which came in a huge, big box. And that was a time when, like, special editions and collector's editions weren't popular. You know, they weren't, like, the thing. Every game didn't have it.
Yeah.
So everyone was individually numbered. We got, I want to say it was over 100. And our entire back stock room was, like, filled with these boxes of them.
You know how much one of those would be worth today? Like, if you still had a sealed copy.
Yeah. I still have everything from it. I don't have the box anymore. I kept it for the longest time.
Those Blizzard Collector's Editions have a have some allure. I mean, I have the collector's edition of the original WoW, and not many people did. They didn't make too many of those.
Yeah.
Because they had really no grasp on how many people would actually play it. And so I think they only made like 50,000 of them, and they sold however many million copies of the game, so...
Yeah. I still have my Warcraft 3 one. I when we moved, it came with me, and the box is sitting on a shelf next to me and still has all the stuff in it still.
Yeah.
I always picked up the Blizzard Collector's Editions because they had the awesome art books with it, which is the reason I picked them up, so...
Yeah.
And the DVDs of their cutscenes, because, you know, the cutscenes for Blizzard back in the day were...
They still are, man.
Yeah.
Well, you know what's funny is I always appreciated the Blizzard games, because even, like, if you go back to, like, Warcraft 2 and Starcraft, they give you those, like, big meaty notepads of, like, Blizzard letterhead to, like, doodle on, and every time I clean out my junk drawer, I find another one of those. And I'm pretty sure they're from, like, 1995, but it keeps appearing in my stuff.
Yeah, so it was good. You know, like I said, it's amazing how far PC gaming has fallen.
But, like...
In the sense of, it used to be such a big deal in retail and stuff. Like I said, like the launch... I'll be curious how big of a launch like StarCraft 2 and stuff gets, because I did see GameStop kind of pimping it in their weekly newsletter or whatever you call it.
You know, thing I really miss about older PC gaming were the boxes. It's like, especially like the LucasArts ones.
Yeah.
They had a whole bunch of cool stuff in them. Like, they had like the hint books, or if you go way back to like Indiana Jones and The Last Crusade, it had like the Grail Diary and things like that. Cloth maps and
the decoder wheels too, for the anti-piracy detection.
And I kicked myself every day for when I went off to college, which, by the way, was when Diablo 2 came out. to save space, I threw out almost all of my PC game boxes.
Yeah,
and I put like all of the discs and things into binders and brought those, and I became sometime between then and now, I decided that I would collect stuff, and I look at that binder full of like old school, like 1992 to 2000 PC games, and I shed a tear. Like, that had a code wheel, and that had a nice box, and sad. But getting back to Diablo 2, I mean, how many non-MMO, like, MMORPG games are still actively patched 10 years beyond their release date?
Probably nothing.
StarCraft? I think StarCraft got a patch last year, too.
Yeah. Speaking of, I actually downloaded WoW the other day.
Because
I wanted to check out Cataclysm, but apparently you do need a full account.
Yeah.
You can't do it with the trial. I thought you could. So... It stopped. There was like a glitch though on the website when I tried to get the trial. I now have six Warcraft or World of Warcraft trials in my Battle.net account.
That's funny. Well, it's
so,
if you want, my brother stopped playing like 3 years ago, and he has like a Burning Crusade account. I could probably give you the password to.
There we go. Oh, don't tell Blizzard.
Oh yeah. Well, he turned it over to me, so I own it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I might eventually check it out and check out Cataclysm and stuff. So let's move on. We spent enough time on Blizzard, and let's talk about another B company, Bungie, and Halo Reach, and its firefight mode. We got lots of new info about it, and I accidentally just closed it, so give me a second.
Jeez, Nick.
So, okay, I know. First thing, drop in, drop out for firefight.
Finally.
Which is... Yes.
I would have taken that over matchmaking. Really.
Yeah. So we already do know that it does have matchmaking. That was like one of the first things they announced. But now they also announced drop-in, drop-out support, which was, that was always killer in the last firefight in ODST because, the matches would go so long and someone would drop out and it would just kill... depending on who it was, it could kill the whole thing.
Yeah.
Now, it's along those lines is a lot of the customization options With it, you can, the matches won't last by default an hour or whatever. I think the default game type, they say, is like 15 to 20 minutes you can blast through. But with all the customization options and stuff like that, you can make it basic classic Firefight. The other thing that they talked about was the experience model with it and how that will, you know, even in your custom matches in Firefight, you can earn experience towards your character to unlock new armor pieces and whatever else is Bungie's going to have you able to unlock. And the story goes, they talked about one of the modes the testers made where basically they made it instead of about, you know, how many kills or whatever else, or if they could survive, it was how many kills they could get in a set period of time. So they made themselves invulnerable with jetpacks that never ran out of fuel. made the enemies ridiculously hard, and you know, they just went at it. So it sounds like it's going to be really, really flexible. So it's going to have a lot of legs. You know, we enjoyed the heck out of Firefight with basically minimal customization options. So it's going to, I think it's going to sit pretty well with people. And finally, that was it for our news.
That's a lot of news.
Yeah, there was quite a bit. July looks like it's going to be a pretty calm month. There's not too many games being released.
StarCraft is... Everyone is moving out of the way of StarCraft, I'd say.
Yeah, you know, we had Crackdown at the beginning and then StarCraft at the end. But we wanted to talk about some site discussions and community kind of stuff. And we took a look at our forums. And one of the threads I thought was kind of interesting was something is like, do you still call gaming, you know, playing Nintendo? And this is from, you know, non-gamers, a parent's perspective. You know, regardless if you're playing your Sega or your PlayStation or whatever, you know, a lot of times people's moms or parents would be like, are you guys going to play Nintendo, right? That was taking the place of video games. And what these guys tried to do was they tried to replace the whole Nintendo thing to see if it was just like with Wii, you know, and use that as a substitute for it. And they wondered if, is that taking its place amongst parents or whoever else, regardless of what they're playing. I'd be curious, you know, there's a couple discussions going back and forth. I think most of the people have said that it's not really becoming that kind of nomenclature where it is, you know, that's being used in place of video games. But, I mean, have you seen it anywhere? Like, talking to, you know, whoever?
A lot of people that are really casual these days ask if I, like, if I play Xbox.
Yeah.
Or, you know, the, you know, games. A lot of people I know say computer games. I haven't heard anyone say play Nintendo, probably.
Yeah, in a long time.
I would say probably since I was in middle school. But, you know, I tend to run in a crowd where even if they're not gamers, they're tech savvy, so they know what they're talking about regardless.
Yeah.
The closest thing I get to that when I talk to people is computer games.
Mm-hmm.
Like, oh, you play computer games. Like,
right.
Yeah, well, yes, and, you know, consoles. And I go on my spiel, but, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, I always enjoy kind of eavesdropping in on people that are having conversations about video games that aren't gamers. You know, a lot of the older people whose kids are, you know, 9 or 10, and they're kind of introducing their parents to games. They might have dabbled in games a while ago, but they never really became a quote-unquote core gamer. It's kind of interesting to hear them talk about just doing different things. I mean, most of those cases, they are playing Wii with their kids. And you know, they talk about... The one day was interesting hearing a conversation about the new Super Mario Brothers game, and the dad was getting frustrated with it because the kid kept knocking him off of everything when they were playing together, which was kind of one of the complaints that we had in our review that, you know, the platforming aspect is frustrating in co-op because everyone bounces off each other, basically. And it was interesting to hear a casual person have that same complaint. So,
yeah. Oh, gameplay flaw is a gameplay flaw. I mean, you know, if someone plays the game enough, they're going to say, well, this is annoying.
Yeah.
I find non-gamers or people who don't game that much tend to find those flaws a lot quicker. I think, as experienced gamers, we tend to say, well, this is expected because most games of this type have this problem, so I'm just going to ignore it. But when my wife plays stuff, she's really quick to point out when something bugs her.
Yeah. We probably overlook stuff a lot easier. We're kind of used to it.
Yeah. As you play more and more games, you know, if something is a really common flaw, you almost stop seeing it because you know it's going to be there. Like, we notice when something is changed for the better, but when it's, you know, outdated or, you know, has bad controls, sometimes, you know, if in the interest of seeing what the rest of the game's all about, we'll kind of gloss over it.
Yeah. So another interesting post that was on our forums.
Yeah.
I don't know if you took the time to read this.
I posted in this thread. You may have seen.
At first I thought it was a bot. I really did. And then I read it and I realized that, you know, it was, I think it's just a younger reader, and he was kind of going out about console exclusives, and the title of the thread is actually Microsoft Corruption in Gaming. And his complaint.
I'm pretty sure it was a female reader.
Could be. Bye for now, Dawn. Yeah, okay. It's a female reader. But she had just said that, you know, I don't like the fact that Gears of War 1, while it was on 360 and PC, after that you can only play Gears of War on 360. And she says that Microsoft has lots of money, so they can do this, and she doesn't think it's right. And, the only thing to really say is console exclusives have been around for a long time.
Well, I think the real point that I took out of this was, okay, Gears 1 was on, you know, console and PC, but Gears 2 was not. Therefore, by the logic she used, they hooked you on Gears and then sold you an Xbox so you could play more Gears. I'm pretty sure that's where she was taking it.
Okay.
And,
yeah, I can see that.
The answer I have is that Gears 1 sold like shit on PC.
Yeah.
And it wasn't really that good, so there's no real reason for Microsoft to make Gears 2 when, you know, maybe, you know, 5% of the people that bought it on, you know, 360 bought it on PC or some number I'm pulling out of my butt. Something like Halo. She also brought up, you know, Halo 1 and 2 were ported to, Halo 1 was actually ported to both PC and Mac. Halo 2, and it sold pretty well, and it had a pretty decent online community. I actually had a couple friends that played it a ton, which surprised me. But then they released Halo 2, and they made it Vista only. And they pretty much torpedoed any chance of that game succeeding, because when they released it either right when Vista launched or very soon after. And Vista had a very slow adoption rate. And so they couldn't sell too many, and the people that bought it probably returned it because they didn't know they had to have Vista. So
that was a silly, silly decision to think that like something like Halo could actually sell an operating system.
Right hand doesn't know what the left hand's doing at Microsoft, I'd say.
Yeah.
But once again, they didn't put Halo 3 out because, you know, the last one sold like crap. You know, and they're probably like, well, people who want to play this are generally Xbox gamers already, so why waste the resources? And I don't think Fable sold, you know, Fable is another one. There was a PC version of Fable 1, but I'm pretty sure there wasn't one of Fable 2.
I don't think there was.
But the Fable 1 PC version didn't sell very well. And there's a definite trend. Especially if we're only looking at Microsoft games, the poster suggests.
Yeah, well, I mean, Microsoft has their platform has the advantage of if you do write something for the 360, 9 times out of 10, it's very easily ported to the PC because the development tools are very, very close.
Yeah.
And like I said, I've been playing with XNA, and like the XNA stuff, the code to do it, it's... you know, you're talking like 5 to 10% of your code needs to be adapted to make a console version or a PC version of that game.
Yeah.
I mean, it's incredibly easy. They make it so easy to do. So, I mean, that's why you do see a lot of PC ports of those games, but I think a lot of times those games are designed for console first and then they come to PC, and it's, you know, the PC crowd, the gamers know what they want. They see past that kind of fluff.
I think most PC gamers don't want console ports.
Right, they play it on a console. I think most PC gamers, a lot of them do own the consoles, and they'd rather play those games there if they play them at all.
Often out of necessity.
Yeah. Yeah. So another thing, too, I started doing this today. I don't know if you saw, but I thought it might be... Yeah, I pinged Twitter and said, you know, what do you guys want to have us talk about on the show tonight? And we had a few responses. One of them was the upcoming Xbox Live Arcade games from Mike B. He had asked that, so we covered that earlier. And another one I thought, which was interesting, we didn't kind of address this directly, but I just wanted to mention it. It was Mr. Bibbs had said he wanted feedback on the co-op or lack thereof in Crackdown 2, and I think it's almost the opposite. I think there's a lack of single player in Crackdown 2 rather than a lack of co-op.
Well, the perceived lack of co-op in the Crackdown games is the fact that in a lot of open world games, like Mercs 2, for instance, the co-op mm-hmm. players were leashed to one another. You had to be within X distance of your partner, or you couldn't move anywhere on the map. So right. The game essentially forced you to at least be in the same area, and that would pretty much make co-op a necessity. Because you're both being shot at by the same guys, so you're both going to be shooting at it whether you're really working with your partner or not. And the difference is that Crackdown allows you to go anywhere in the world at any time, whether your partner is with you or not. Yeah. And a lot of people, when they complain about the co-op in Crackdown, they're like, well, my buddy's across the map doing stuff, and I don't, you know, I can't get to him quickly, and he's doing things, and I just, you know, quit. And there's a certain amount of extra coordination you have to do in Crackdown to get your players together, but, you know, when four people are doing, are going co-op, I mean, it happened in our sessions, like, we'd go off in pairs and do stuff, or,
yeah.
You know, three people would get, you know, go orb hunting, and someone else would go to a different part of the map and fight freaks to build their strength up, or...
Yeah.
But the world is both large and small enough that you can stay away from one another, or, you know, what happened with me a lot is, you know, there'd be three people doing something, and I'd have gone off orb hunting, because I had higher abilities than everybody when mm-hmm. we did our big session. And yeah. I'd come back, and I'd be like, hey guys, look at this new weapon, and I'd kill everybody with a giant explosion. You know, and I go yeah. around and revive everyone, and it, you know, we had a great amount of fun doing that. But once again, Crackdown is a game where you make your own fun.
Yeah.
It doesn't force you to play co-op, but if you work together, you can do some really hilarious things.
Yeah, well, you just mentioned one of the things that they actually improved the co-op with, and that's player revival. You don't have to... you know, where are you guys at? Where do I have to spawn back in at? You can actually revive a fallen agent.
And you can request help, too.
Right, yeah. And they also added not only two-player kind of co-op vehicles, but four-player co-op ones. There's, like, kind of that tank-looking bus.
Yeah, the battle bus.
There's two turrets and stuff on it. So you can get all four people in it and drive down the street and just basically, you know, hose down freaks like a... you know, a fire truck that shoots lead. you know, they did that. And obviously, the other big thing is that the co-op orbs, where you need at least two people near them to collect them. It's kind of interesting if you look at the places that they put those orbs, they're kind of in key points around the map to try and get people to go to together to have some fun. So I found a few in some interesting places. Some right outside of the wingsuit rings that you had to go through. There's a few of the co-op orbs, like, at the start of where those wingsuit things would be, you know. There's plenty of co-op achievements and stuff, too. So, yeah, I guess I see the point that there is a definitive lack of co-op in terms of guided for you. But in terms of open world co-op, it's one of the best games for that. It continues what Crackdown did, in that you aren't tied to each other, and that you can
make it as co-op as you want it to be.
Yeah, it's not like something like say Left 4 Dead, where the levels are actually pretty open and you can go wherever you want in them, but yeah. the game tries to funnel you with your teammates, or if you separate, it punishes you by, you know, spawning something that you can't deal with. Crackdown is pretty much the opposite. You know, all of the objectives, you know, especially in co-op, take coordination to work through, but it's not going to punish you if someone else decides that they want to lob rockets at freaks from atop a skyscraper.
Yeah. All right, so yeah, that'll be something I hope we can do more of in the future. We'll have kind of Twitter discussions with people. You know, you can follow myself, Nick Paleo, or Mike Farinoth, or Co-Optimus on Twitter, and we'll ping out for questions and things he wants to see us cover. I think the other one, it was Duke Frucum, wanted us to cover some StarCraft II stuff, which we did. So, thank you guys for the questions and stuff.
We aim to please.
Yes. So let's wrap things up here. There's only a few things left. Upcoming co-op releases, there's only one on the schedule, and that is Deathspank on Xbox Live Arcade and PSN on the 14th. I think PSN will be the 13th. Site stuff, what do? We had plenty of reviews and a lot of big names. Mark just posted Toy Story 3's co-op review. I reviewed Earthworm Jim HD. The aforementioned Crackdown 2, which is our biggest review ever of 5 pages. It would have been a bit much, but it was...
How many different reviewers did we have on that?
5 of us, yeah. So basically a page reviewer. So it was fun, though, to do it that way, a little bit different. You know, and you can do it, I'm sure, like everyone else.
Can I mention how awesome it was that rather than send disc copies, they gave us download codes for the review copy?
Oh, I love being able to just freaking go and fire that game up without looking for the disc every time. And like,
I think that, you know, talking about, you know, behind the scenes stuff, that is so much nicer for review stuff than, you know, waiting on, oh, are we going to get a disc copy? Oh, well, they're sending them out to the big sites, and then they're sending community sites them the following week, so all the big sites can get their reviews up first. You know, and you know, I'm sure you've come across times when they're like, we don't have any review copies left.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's like, well, create a code and give us a downloadable copy, and it works. Yeah. It's worked for PSP for a long time now. They don't have to send a UMD. They just, since everything, most everything has to go on PSN, they said, well, here's a code to download it to your PSP. There you go. Yeah. And
Ruffian... Yeah, I'd definitely like to see more publishers follow suit with that. And
I also hope that it means that you can eventually buy this off directly off of Xbox Live.
Yeah.
At some point. I don't think you can now, but...
No. Yeah. So, what else do we review? Snoopy Flying Ace... Jim took the reins on that one. Transformers War for Cybertron. Of course, Mark did that. He is a Transformer, I don't know what the word, aficionado. He owns a lot of them.
He has a room dedicated to them.
Yeah, he has a room dedicated to them. So, I should have him post his... When we were looking for original editors, he had sent a story about Optimus Prime for his thing, and it's a really interesting read because it's about like how he always wanted it and he never got it, and he was like almost 30 years old before his parents finally bought him one. Basically, it's kind of like a joke gift kind of thing, and you know, it's told in a way only Mark can do it. So I should have him post that maybe to his little blog on there.
Yeah,
something like that'd be good. Lego Harry Potter years 1 through 4. Sam took that one up. And Cat reviewed Metal Gear Solid Peace Walker. So lots of big games in the past couple weeks came out, and we got coverage on that for you. Features? Was it Smurfster? Eric Murphy posted up a Vidmaster guide called the Road to Recon to get yourself your Recon armor finally for Halo 3.
That was a really great read.
Yeah, he did a really good job on that, and you know, there's a lot of co-op involved in getting some of those Vidmaster achievements.
He talked about like communities I didn't even know existed.
Yeah. I mean, him and his wife are really involved with that kind of stuff, so I was happy to see him write that up. And we posted that up for Bungie Day, which is 7/7. What else do we got? We had a co-op classics covering Diablo 2 for its 10-year anniversary. Jim posted a co-op couples about hosting people in your house and finding time to play co-op games. Kat posted it on the download, which focused on Earthworm Jim. And that was about it. We have t-shirts now. I guess I can say once again that it'll be like having Nick and Mike gently caressing your nipples all day long if you buy one of our t-shirts. That comes at no extra cost. We partner with Split Reason for that. So you can hit up splitreason.com/cooptimus, and we've got 3 shirts on there. What else? Leave feedback if you listen to us on iTunes, and give us those 5 lovely stars, and tell us that you like the sound of our sultry voices, and that it helps you sleep at night.
No, it helps keep them up at night, because they can't stop listening to us.
Oh, that too. And finally, control us.
If we're gently caressing their nipples, and we're speaking in our sweet, dulcet tones, it might help them rest better.
We're going to have to start putting the explicit tag on this.
That's my goal.
Finally, you can follow us on Twitter. We are Co-Optimus without the dash. So this has been the Co-Opticast for Sunday, July the 11th. Thank you for listening.
Free to live out its miserable span of existence as one of my satellites. And that's how it's going to be.